Greetings, you beautiful human. This is Glenn Klein Online. It's Monday, August 27, 2007, the only August 27, 2007 in the history of humanity. Let's keep that in mind as we continue down the road, known as Glenn Klein Online. We always like to remind you beautiful humans that this is not a dress rehearsal. This is the only time that we get to do this, and so let's make the best of it. As I always like to point out, if this was the last day of your life and you knew it, what would you be doing? Would you be listening to this webcast right now, for example? Now, that is not a morbid thought, ladies and gentlemen. That is just the truth. At some point, your last day on Earth, or that day on Earth, is your last day. This is why it's so important that when you depart from loved ones, you say, I love you, if you do. Because your last conversation at some point with them is going to be your last conversation. Again, this is not morbid. This is reality. Some people don't like to face up to reality. I'm sure the folks that were going up the elevators in the World Trade Centers on 9/11 did not think that that morning a jet airliner was going to land in their lap. But there it was. That was the last thing that they thought was going to happen. For some reason, I don't need a 9/11 or some tragedy to bring reality into my heart and my mind. Some people do. The divorce rate went down after 9/11. The people were just nicer to each other after 9/11. It'd be nice to be nice to the nice all the time. Now, the question really isn't what you do, because I know exactly what I will be doing on the last day of my life. I will be trying to make a difference and having some fun, and trying to extend that to other people. And that's what I advise for you as your coach for life. And I remember exactly what I was doing the morning of September 11, 2001. I was on my way to radio station WTAN in Clearwater, Florida, where I was, I wouldn't say gainfully employed, but I was employed at the time. And I stopped at the post office in Riverview, Florida, and had the radio on, but had not heard anything. And then somebody standing in line in the post office said, hey, a plane hit the World Trade Center. They thought it was a commuter plane or little puddle jumper or something. Well, little did all of us standing in the Riverview post office know exactly what was going on. And, of course, I tuned on the radio as soon as I got in the car and then traveled all the way, which is about an hour and 15-minute commute. And by the time I got to the Tampa airport region there, all the flights were shut down. And, of course, the radio station was running news 24/7 at that point. No talk shows that day, just coverage of the World Trade Center centers coming down. And I was one of the few people probably in the United States that did not see that happen live, especially the second tower hit. But at the same time that that was happening, I was co-hosting a radio show with our guest tonight, Mr. Michael Rogan, who is the president and founder of Rogan & Associates. Michael!
Yes, sir.
It's been a long time since we've been on the radio together.
It sure has, almost 6 years.
But I'm so happy to have you. How are you this evening?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I am doing wonderfully. Thank you for caring enough to ask, because I know you do care.
I do indeed.
Michael oversees the day-to-day operations of Rogan & Associates, as well as helping his clients create and preserve wealth. Michael Rogan is a longtime resident of the beautiful Tampa Bay area. After graduating from the University of Virginia with a degree in economics and finance, he chose a career in the financial service industry. He holds the NASD registration series 4, 7, 24, 27, 53, and 63, whatever the hell that means, as well as a state of Florida life and health insurance and variable annuity license. Michael, I cannot thank you for taking the time. Michael has his own radio show on 1250 WHNZ?
WHNZ.
And we started together on a very wacky radio station.
Oh, no doubt.
Called WTAN in Clearwater, Florida. And for those of the beautiful humans that are regular listeners to the Glenn Klein Online webcast, you've heard me talk about this experience from time to time. But we had a good time there, and I learned so much from you, Michael, about financial planning. I think, first of all, the fact that you've been in this for 22 years really says a lot, because most financial planners that are approaching people are Well, what is the average financial planner's career at this point?
It's less than 5 years. The average person who ever has a securities license is in the game less than 5 years. It's a tough business to get into, and a lot of that's the traditional way the firms do it. You start out on your own, basically often without a salary, and your job is just to sell enough people some products. I mean, if you saw the movie The Pursuit of Happiness, it was a fairly accurate portrayal of things.
And why do you think that guys either don't get into it, because obviously potentially it's lucrative, or they just don't stay in it?
Well, I think it's in the beginning, you're supposed to think it's a very glamorous profession, and it's hardly glamorous at all in the beginning. In the days when I started, it was a matter of picking up the phone and calling strangers and asking them to do business with you. I'm not really sure how you would start these days, because that doesn't work anymore. People hold seminars, and they bring people in, and they just try to sell you things. It's tough to stay in, but once you do, if you manage to stay in long enough to learn enough about the business, like you say, it can be rewarding. But I don't know. A lot of people ask me how would they get started, and I often discourage them.
Why is that?
Well, again, because it's very difficult. You know, if you're not starting, if you start at a firm that is going to pay you a salary, oftentimes they're going to be asking you to sell their products that they create. If you try to start independently, you better have a year or two's expenses socked away, because chances are you're just not going to make any money.
And why did you decide to go into financial planning and advising?
I was doing a job search right out of college, and essentially they told me I would make a lot of money, to be very honest. They were not quite as candid about how long it would take and what I'd have to do to stay in, but that was, you know, profit motive, to be fair, in the beginning.
And how'd that pan out for you?
Well, let's just say I'm the 22-year overnight success.
You know, I appreciate it so much learning, because when people make money and then they decide that, let's say they make money as a doctor or as a teacher or as a cop or a lawyer or whatever field that they, a broadcaster, doesn't make camp director, it doesn't make a difference what they do, that's their area of expertise. But for some reason, Michael, people think that because they made the money, then they know what to do with it without any expertise or training at all.
Well, that's what's been out there in the media, and it's out there on the advertisements, that it's very easy to do it on your own. And you're exactly right. People who do get wealthy, very, very few people, it seems, get wealthy with their investments. They get wealthy through their business almost always. There's a recent study that showed of the people worth $5 million or more in this country, 84% are first generation, most of them entrepreneurs. And, you know, we run into that a lot of times as people get ready to retire. We just recently took on some clients who have ran a florist for 35 years. And it's an important point, because they at least knew enough to know they needed help. They knew every day for 35 years when they got up, they knew exactly what to do, and they were experts in what they did. And then one day they were going to wake up, and they had just sold their business, and they were starting from scratch again. And, you know, it's a very difficult thing for people to face. But I run into that a lot of times, too. People will ask me for advice and then tell me their rich friend told them something completely different that's off the wall. And I always say, well, how'd they make their money? And often they'll say, what difference does that make? Well, it makes an enormous difference. There's so much. The way to make money with investing actually ends up being fairly simple. But everybody always tries to complicate it. And it takes almost a vast amount of experience to recognize that, in fact, it's pretty simple. It took me probably half of my career to get the fact that you don't need esoteric, new hot investing ideas. It just took me about the third or fourth cycle of the new hot idea that never worked out.
Right. So you may be dumb, but you're not stupid, is what you're telling me.
That's right. Yeah, I think back a lot of times, Glenn, when we were on that program, just as a refresher, we had switched over from doing a show once a week to once a day on September 10th.
Yeah.
And who knew, you know? And then we were preempted for a while because nobody really wanted to talk about long-term planning.
Or anything else, for that matter.
That's right. That's right. But what a really interesting time to get acquainted, because, you know, as you know, we sat there and explained to people that this is very emotional and people are going to overreact.
Let's rehearse the fact that the market went in the tank. Of course, Wall Street was shut down for almost a week.
Right, first time in my career.
Yeah, when that happened. But I have to say, ladies and gentlemen, that Michael was steadfast from day one in his opinion of what would happen with time and with patience. And sure enough, what was the low mark after 9/11?
At that point, the Dow dipped down to about 7,500, but it closed the year. Most people forget this. It actually closed the year over 10,000. It took just a month or two before it had fully recovered. A lot of times these days, Glenn, I'll have people tell me, yeah, you know, I lost a lot of money with 9/11. And it's hard for me to just come back and say, well, you know, your memory is faulty. But in fact, and a lot of people these days will say, you know, are you prepared for the next terrorist attack? Well, the first one took about 45 days before the market fully recovered. It dipped down from 9,600 down to 7,500. And had you been realizing that the stock market reflects ownership of the great companies in America, you have to realize that one terrorist attack didn't make the great companies in America worth that much less.
Right.
And a few months later, you would be up 30-35% just by the end of the year.
I remember after 9/11, that you just literally preaching day after day after day, staying in there and saying, this is the time to get in. This is the opportunity. Buy low, sell high. It's like the market was on sale, you used to say.
Absolutely right. And, you know, what happened subsequent to that in 02, we had a lot of the politicians who seemed a little bit impotent at that time decide they needed to make themselves a little more recognized, and they took advantage of the fact that we had about 10 scandals out of about 10,000 public companies, and so they passed some really horrendous legislation called Sarbanes-Oxley. And while they were crafting that legislation, the market was a little wary of it, and so the market did, in fact, dip a little bit lower again before we had an opportunity. But as you know, today, down from the depths of 7,000-8,000, we're at nearly 14,000.
Right, and of course we went over 14,000 recently. So yeah. If you got in then and stayed in, you're doing really well right now.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's so funny that we in this country think of investing in the stock market as risky, and it really is born out of love. Misguided love from a lot of folks that were raised during the Great Depression, something that almost certainly won't get repeated. It was caused by the Fed. The Fed was only about 16 years old back then. They made some really classic blunders. This last economic cycle, they did exactly the opposite, kind of proving we're not going to do that again. But nonetheless, you know, people think the market is risky. I'll throw out a couple of statistics for you. Somebody who's wanting to retire this year at 62, you know, whether you can get Social Security with a lowered benefit, would have been born in 1945. If somebody had, the day they were born, been kind enough to put $1,000 into the market and leave it there, presuming a tax-deferred account, it would be worth $1 million today, just about. So $1,000 to $1 million, and we think that's risky.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's really...
That's a good kind of risk, Michael.
Yes, I understand. I'm more to my point, just so I can make this more personal, as I was telling people, excuse me, the Dow Jones Industrial Average the day I was born was around 725, plain 725. And as you know, it's 13 and change down from 14,000. All indexes omit dividends because as a stock pays a dividend, it goes ex-dividend and opens the next day lower of the amount of the dividend. So long story short, 725 to 14,000 doesn't count dividends. Were you to count the dividends and reinvest them, as most of us do, in just my lifetime, and I'm 44, the Dow would have gone from 725 to over 50,000.
Wow.
And we think, somehow, it's risky. Really, what's risky is what we do during the volatility that makes it risky.
Right. And it's amazing the effect or the reaction of the market to the smallest comment from the chair of the Federal Reserve Board or whatever is going on. And of course, the news media plays it up too as well, but sometimes it's just good old-fashioned profit-taking, isn't it?
There can be, sure. There can be profit-taking. Almost, see, if you were in the news media's shoes, you had to write a column every day to explain the unexplainable, to explain the statistically insignificant and give it a reason, then you're going to have to start crafting reasons why. You know, everybody's worried about subprime loans. Everybody's worried about the credit disaster, all the kind of crazy headlines we have today. very, very rarely is any of that true, but they have to report it that way. The market in the short run is like a popularity contest. It's whatever the emotions are of the day. In the long run, it always reflects the overall value of the companies, which means in the long run, it's just a value machine. Sorry, I'm a little choked up here.
That's okay. I'll give you a second. I know you've been fighting off a little bit of a virus or a bacterial infection. This is Glenn Klein online. We're talking with Michael Rogan, and we appreciate him coming and playing hurt tonight on the Glenn Klein online webcast. If you're logging on to listen to our interview with NBA star Mike Dunleavy Jr., who was scheduled at 9 o'clock tonight, that's been rescheduled. Mike had something come up. Another Michael had something come up.
There's a few of us.
Yes, and there's a few already on the archives. Many different Michaels. But he will be with us, Lord willing, and if the creek don't rise, Thursday night at 9 o'clock Eastern. But we're talking to another tall Michael, not quite as tall,
no.
But potentially as wealthy. Although Dunleavy told me recently, he was a camper of ours at the camp, Michael, and I hadn't talked to him in 15 years, and he just signed a $40 million contract. And I said, Mike, how the hell are you? And he said, Glenn, I'm a very lucky man. And I said, hell yeah, you are, dude. And that's good that you know it. But
well, that's the thing. You don't want to lose your perspective on things.
Well, a lot of people, you know, and here's the thing about wealth. And this is why so many people who win the lottery go broke, and sometimes even worse than going broke. They commit suicide. Their relationships are devastated. Is because wealth is made to be earned slowly but surely. If you're born into it, you're kind of used to being around it. You have a little bit of footing, but if you don't have a background with it and you're just a workaday guy, and obviously there's nothing wrong with that, and all of a sudden you've got millions of dollars at your disposal, that's not how wealth is made to be earned. I mean, that's why they call it earned. I mean, it's made to be to grow slowly over time so that we know how to handle it when it comes our way.
Well, no question. We actually counsel our clients when they're doing estate planning on giving lump sums to their children or their grandchildren when they die for that exact same reason. And it doesn't matter really the age of the beneficiary. A lump sum, particularly the larger, the more dangerous it can be. And we see that constantly. We know of a family who, a very wealthy family, who in South Florida, when the patriarch had passed away, they set up these trust funds for the kids, and they set it up to pay them at 18, and one of the kids was paid his first installment, which was millions of dollars at age 18, and within about 20 seconds, he had dropped out of college and started buying and trading boats and all sorts of other sort of pleasures, and in about 4 or 5 months, he had committed suicide.
That's not good. Yeah, that's not good. This is Glenn Klein Online. You can email us your questions tonight at coach@glennklineonline.com. That's coach@glennklineonline.com because I am your coach for life. Speaking of for life, Michael's website is financialplanningforlife.com, financialplanningforlife.com. He is the president and founder of Rogan & Associates, also hosts a radio show of his own on the WHNZ in the Tampa Bay area, 1250 on your AM dial, weekdays at 11 o'clock. Michael, we've got this question coming to us from Spencer in Texarkana. He says, Michael, what is your take on the coming economic collapse?
There isn't one. That would be my first start. There, that's any kind of time you get questions phrased in hyperbole, I have a hard time taking them very seriously. We don't really have any kind of economic collapse. Our economy is doing very well these days. There was what we're going through is a natural correction from probably the Federal Reserve being a little bit too lenient. And then, as always, anytime there's any kind of a crack in the armor, people try to take advantage of it. And so, you know, for years, if you could fog a mirror, you could get a mortgage loan. And that was obviously not the way it's supposed to work. And so now we're having a little bit of a correction in those people that probably shouldn't have had those loans. You can assign the blame anywhere you'd like. But now that that's coming back to haunt us a little bit. But as far as how that's going to affect the overall economy, it's not very significant at all. Currently, we have a very robust economy, very good growth. And the only thing that probably has been good for stock market investors overall is that the subprime, the little bit of effect it's going to have on the overall economy, the subprime issue that's going on out there, it changed our economy from one that was growing so fast that the Fed was probably going to have to raise rates even further to forestall inflation, to one that is slowing down enough. Now the Fed's probably later this year going to be able to ease rates a little bit. And typically, in the third year of a presidential election cycle, an easing of interest rates bodes very well for the coming 12 to 24 months in the stock market. But I see, and I do understand the economy quite well, and I understand, in fact, all of the different things that are out there about what's going on in the economy, but there's nothing going on that's particularly bad at all.
Michael, talk for a moment to the beautiful humans about what happened in the late 90s with the IT bubble bursting, and what was the cause of that, and what were the dynamics that were perhaps unique to that situation?
Well, you know, it's funny. There were dynamics that were unique given that we had never had the internet before. We never had a lot of the details of such promise that appeared to be there with these tech companies. But as anything, it gets carried away, and people started betting on just the fact if you had .com in your name, people bought your stock, and you know, valuations got crazy. But you couldn't even say valuations got crazy with some of those companies. These companies were going public without a business plan that ever showed them making a profit, and the stock was being bid up tremendously. And that's what you know is sort of the end of a mania. But you know, Glenn, it's interesting because that is what has so much in common with any of the other things we're going on with about here. The real estate boom and bust was the same set of emotional parameters. You know, you had people take advantage, and all of a sudden we all knew somebody who could drop out of school or somebody who all of a sudden was getting rich buying condos and flipping them, and everybody decided that was what they were going to do for a living.
Right.
And it got, obviously way out of whack. We had a broadcast ourselves that we sort of had a lightning bolt sign from God one day, and they happen periodically. But we were talking to people February 8th of 2005 about how overheated the real estate market was. And I'll get back to your tech bubble in a minute. But we, one of the guys here had Chinese food that day for lunch, and his fortune cookie said, "You will make more money in real estate than in stocks." And we said, you know, when the fortune cookie fortune writers are telling you you should buy real estate, it's over.
But the problem was he didn't follow it with between the sheets.
Right.
So you're always supposed to say between the sheets after reading fortune cookies.
Well, oh, yeah, I've heard that. Well, that would be the only way for that.
Exactly, That was the problem.
It's the same thing with any of these manias. It's the same thing with, you know, what's going on now on Wall Street. People with hedge funds and people with some of these private equity funds saw a way to use leverage to make these outsized returns, and then they tied their compensation to how much return the fund would deliver in 1 year, and then they took their compensation. I was telling people this quite a while now. They took their compensation, they took their money off the table and left the people in those funds highly leveraged. And of course, it always comes back to roost at some point. In the dot-com era, it was a set of parameters that was actually fueled by Y2K. The Fed felt like they had to leave money supply very loose in case there was going to be a run on the banks for the non-event that was Y2K, and so things got a little overheated. With the recent real estate bubble, the Fed was fighting the sort of the boogeyman of deflation, and they thought that we might have deflation. While the risk of it was very remote, the effects would have been pretty disastrous, and so they left money too cheap, too easy for too long, and now all we're doing is correcting from that. But, you know, I'm going to give you a quotation from Sir John Templeton, who was a world-famous international investor and a guy who was knighted by the Queen for his international investing prowess. But he said, bull markets, meaning any up market, and this applies not just to the stock market, it applies to anything. Bull markets are born on pessimism. They grow on skepticism. They mature on optimism. Mm. and they die on euphoria. And if you just remember that, or, you know, however you want to look at it, whenever all of your friends are doing something, it's the wrong time. Think about it. When did all of your friends ever do the right thing? And so whenever everybody's telling you how rich they're getting with some off-the-wall thing you'd never tried before, it's over. A few people get lucky, then the lemmings come in and jump off the cliff.
And that's what happens in multi-level marketing and pyramid schemes and everything else. It's like the few at the top, or at the bottom, if you will get wealthy, and then it's everybody gets wealthy, or everybody at the bottom gets wealthy on everybody at the top, and it don't work.
There's a lot like that. The stock market itself is not really a zero-sum game in that there's increased wealth being created all the time, so there doesn't have to be a loser for every winner. But essentially, any kind of mania that's out there, and it's all based on the same emotional factors. You have two fears out there. One is the fear of losing, and so people are always, you know, worried about losing. But the other one is the fear of losing out, the fear of missing the next great opportunity. And those are very powerful emotions, and those are what get people, you know, pumped up to do something. Look, your email question you had, like I said, it was filled in my mind with hyperbole, the coming crisis. Well, you know, that would be horrible if there was a crisis. There's certainly been, in my career and in the history of the stock market, you know, hundreds of crises out there. All of them would make, most of them would make a housing credit crunch pale by comparison. And all of them have resulted in a higher stock market down the road.
Exactly. Well, and on that higher note, we're going to thank Michael Rogan for joining us and fighting through his cold or infection or whatever you're fighting off, Michael. Our time went, as it always did back in the day, very quickly, and
sure.
We'll have to do it again sometimes very soon.
I look forward to that, Glenn.
Michael, thank you very much. It's Michael Rogan, the founder and president of Rogan Associates, also the host of Financial Planning for Life on AM 1250 WHNZ in the Tampa Bay area. You can hear it on the internet too, right, Michael?
You can, indeed. Go to our website, financialplanningforlife.com, and follow the links.
Much appreciated, my man.
All right, I'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Glenn.
We are going to pause for just a few moments, and then we'll be back online right about 9:30 Eastern Time with Corey Provis, the play-by-play man of the Chicago Cubs from WGN Radio. All you Cub fans and Camp Menominee folks are not going to want to miss that. And stay logged on, and we'll be right back in a few moments. I want to thank Patrick L. Jones, our producer and engineer extraordinaire. This is Glenn Klein Online. For right now, shalom, everybody.